Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of Polar Opposites. That's the PO Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Big T, and as always, I'm joined by my main man, Cool Hand Phil, and he's joining me on, get this, folks, our 100th episode. Dr. Phil, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, man. What did you give me for the 100th episode anniversary?
Man, I got you the exact same thing I got you on the first episode anniversary.
Man. Just
an education.
Okay.
I got you a sports education is what I gave you. That's what I'm going to be giving you. And if I can't give it to you, and to help us commemorate this 100th episode and, of course, the start of the NBA playoffs, I got my other main man, Mr. Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame himself, Ron Rutland Jr. has joined the show. Ron, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. Congratulations.
No doubt about it. So much, Ron, has happened since we last spoke. But let's go ahead and get things started. We'll start this show just like we started the other 99 shows. As adults, you make plenty of decisions every single day, and we're just glad that you decided to spend a little bit of time with us right here on the PO Show. Again, so much has happened in the sports world since we last spoke. I mean, I'm excited about everything that's going on with the NBA, but the NFL just won't go away. They've really led the headlines this week. I don't know if it was the signing of Tim Tebow. This kid's got more lives than a cat. He has another shot to be an NFL quarterback, this time with Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles. That was huge news. But then today, maybe even bigger, the NFL announced their 2015 schedule. They even had a live show to announce the schedule. What other sport has a live show to announce their schedule? The NFL, bigger and badder than they've ever been before. But we won't allow that to take precedent, gentlemen, because we've got NBA basketball to talk about as the first round of the playoffs get underway. And that's where we want to focus our attentions, is on the NBA. So I think we'll go through some of the games. Of course, like I said, we've got Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer Ron Rutland Jr. in the program. There's no possible way that we would let his expertise and insight escape us without talking about some basketball. So I want to start with let's just go with just some basics right here. I want to go around the horn. I'm not asking you to pick necessarily winners and losers, but I just want to go around the horn real quick, and I want to know, who do you see now? You've had a chance to see teams play at this point. So who do you see making it to the NBA Finals? Give me your Western Conference participant. Give me your Eastern Conference participant. Who do you see playing in this year's NBA Finals? We'll let our guests go first there, Phil. So, Ron, who do you see making it to the Finals?
Wow, you're coming strong at me right off the bat. Wow, we can ease into that one?
No, that's how we do it on the PO Show.
I'll tell you what, man, that's a tough call either way. But I guess if I had to pick, I'm probably looking, it's really a wild card, but I'm looking at Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I really think they'll probably come out of the East, just mm-hmm. because I think LeBron at some point will, he's got the hired guns to ride with him
mm-hmm.
to do it. And I think he'll step up and be the man, that he has been in the past. And out the West, man, that's a tough call because, as good as Golden State has looked,
okay,
I'm not sold that they, can really get there.
Mm.
But I don't know who will. I still like San Antonio, but I like what you're doing as well. So I guess if I got to pick right now, I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay with the defending champs until I see the last.
Okay. So Ron Rutland is looking at a Spurs-Cavs Finals. Phil, what do you got?
Well, I'm just glad Ron is here to get beat up on, because I know you're gonna go after him for that Spurs pick. But you know, like I said on our first episode, I got disrespect. That's about the only thing you've ever given me, and of course I say that in jest. But Ron is completely right. I mean, that is a tough question, and you know, what else would we expect from you? I mean, you always come out hitting hard. And I think the West is the toughest one to pick because there's just so many different styles out there. You don't know which one is going to land. You don't know which team will be able to maximize the things that they do best and will capitalize on that to get to the finals. But as we said last week when we talked about who we thought might make it, and now we have a little bit better picture after seeing some of these teams play. But I'm going to have to completely flip-flop on my pick. And, you know, I know no one flip-flops better than you, Terrence, but I'm going to have to pull a hat out of, or a trick out of your hat. But I think the Warriors do have a chance now to make it to the NBA Finals. And the reason I say that is the makeup of their team, they are a lot more balanced than I realize. And I think that goes back to the play of Draymond Green. And I think Draymond, you know, plays very well. He gives them that presence inside that toughness. And then he can make the outside shot on the other end, or he can bang down low. So I think with his presence, he will be able to make them a complete team.
Okay.
And so even though I said that's the team that I'm rooting for,
right,
because I don't like watching any other player more than Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's a complete pleasure to watch. But I actually think they have a shot because, you know, Klay Thompson, he's almost unguardable.
Sure.
And when you have to focus on some of these guys like Steph or, you know, I just said his name now. I'm forgetting it again.
Klay Thompson.
The other Splash brother. Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. But when you have to focus on these guys that can make shots, you're going to leave other guys open, and they're very talented as well. As far as the East, you know, I have to side with Ron there. You know, I think Cavalier can make a run back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they will win the NBA Finals, but I think they can make it back and win the Eastern Conference and be the representative from the East.
Okay, so you go Cavs and Warriors. I like those picks. And, you know, Ron went with Old Faithful, going with the Spurs. You went with the sexy pick and went with the Warriors. And I'm just going to flip it all together and just go with just the pick that nobody's talking about, that should be talking about. I'm taking the Clippers out of the West.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's a no-brainer on the East. Cavaliers will take the East. And I'm taking the Clippers. And when we go to those games, I'll give you my reasoning why in just a second. But let's start with the Cavaliers, since we all picked the Cavaliers. Let's start with that series there, the Cavs and Boston. And I agree with one of the points that Ron made, that at some point, you know, LeBron is going to be LeBron and take this team to great heights. What I'm shocked, and I want to get you guys' take on this, what I'm shocked by, what I'm seeing in this particular series, Cavs versus Boston, I'm shocked at how well Boston is playing and how close these games are in the third quarter. Now, you know, when it gets down to the end of the game and it's LeBron time, there's nothing that anybody can do for it. But I'm a little shocked by how well and how close, how competitive, if you would, these games are played. And that's my question to you guys. Are you shocked with how well this Brad Stevens coach team is playing in their first playoffs together?
Well, I'll go first, and I'd say yes. You know, even when Brad Stevens came into the league, there was a few first-year coaches at that time, and we rated them. I can't remember if it was who did they come out with. Anyway, but there was the first coaches that had just moved, switched to different teams, and we rated them, and I just didn't think Brad Stevens would be able to do in the pros what he was able to do at Butler. You know, I didn't know if he'd be able to motivate his guys like he could, you know, someone that you're able to recruit, bring them into the system. They're still impressionable. So I didn't think he'd be able to do that with grown men, guys that are making millions of dollars. So I am surprised. And, you know, it's been documented. The guy has had like three teams this year.
Yes.
You know, the turnover that they've had, to me, that's what's most impressive. You know, I heard a stat that Bill Russell played with less players in his, 11 championship years than what Brad Stevens has since he's taken over, I think, 3 years ago. So to me, that is incredible that he has had that many players come in and then come out, you know, new faces all the time, and he's still able to put together a system that has been, I mean, marginally successful. I mean, just making the playoffs is not necessarily a big accomplishment, but what he has faced, I would say it probably means more than what a typical year would mean if you made the playoffs. So I would say, yeah, I am impressed with what he's done because I didn't think what he would do would actually translate to the NBA.
Okay, Ron, what's Brad Stevens in Boston? What are they showing you?
I mean, it shows me really how good of a coach he really is. I mean, I obviously saw it at Butler. I mean, you know, being from Indiana, you know, being from Indianapolis and seeing the history of Butler and what he was able to do with that program and get the players to you know, play at their maximum potential.
Okay.
You know, the hardest thing to do is coach good players, because what most coaches will do is overcoach.
Okay.
And what I think he does is he allows his players to be who they are and bring to the table, and all he does is put them in position to be successful. And that is, to me, the greatness. And I think, like I said, I think it just really showed when he got to this level, you know, how good a coach he really is. And like you said, you know, Phil, with, you know, with the many different players that he's had off season and had to deal with, it is very, very impressive that he is in this position to have a playoff team.
I hadn't even that's well put. I haven't even thought of it in those terms. You know, and Phil was talking about at the beginning of that particular basketball season, we rated the three coaches that were at different teams. Brad Stevens, Doc Rivers going out west to L.A., and you had Jason Kidd at that time taking over the Nets job, and we rated who we thought would have the most success. And I think we collectively had put Brad Stevens and the Celtics at the bottom of that heap, but he's definitely proven us wrong right now. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But let's flip it to the other side of that series and talk about these Cavaliers a little bit. What has impressed me most about this particular Cavaliers team that we're looking at right now, it's you can't even come up with an argument to tell me that this isn't the best team that LeBron James has ever had to take into the playoffs. You can't even begin to fix your mouth to argue that that's not true. I mean, this is by far, hands down, the best team that he's had. And it almost looks like LeBron is playing with that type of confidence that this is the best team that I've ever had. LeBron is showing me something different in these games. He is a completely different player. His demeanor, the way he's approaching the game. I watched this game tonight. Watching the Cavaliers overtake Boston, 99-91 was the final. And the low post moves that LeBron was putting on when both teams went small late in the game, the low post moves that he was displaying, I was like, this is a different LeBron. And I got to tell you, I kind of like what I see. And I think if he can stay in that mode, in this frame that this frame of mind that I'm seeing right now, yeah, I can see them doing very, very well in the NBA Finals.
Well, you know, Terrence, you remember the artist Keith Sweat?
Yes, sir.
You know, you might have it twisted, man. I just don't know. I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, LeBron being LeBron. I don't know if that's a good thing. You know, I don't know if LeBron being LeBron is a good thing. We saw him last year in the Finals completely perplexed by what the Spurs were doing. He quit. He gave up. You know, he had no fight in him. And so I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves and act like this Boston team is a great team. Has Brad Stevens done a decent job by at least getting them to the playoffs? Yes, but with that said, Boston is not a great team. So let's wait until he faces some competition, and let's see how he responds to that. Last year, faced great competition. He was on a great team. I mean, you can't tell me that a team with Dwayne Wade, Ray Allen, Chris Bosh, I mean, these guys have been all-stars their whole career. So you can't tell me that is not a good team. But whenever he was faced with a challenge, you know, he wanted no part of it. So, you know, I just don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves and just think, wow, you know, look how great he's playing. Look how he wants to compete. Because if he faces a team that they're, you know, willing to push back, I just want to see how they respond to that.
Not to interrupt, but would somebody please tell Dwight Howard that Tyson Chandler is a grown man and he wants none of that. He might want to rethink messing with Tyson Chandler. That's a grown man, Dwight. You might want to leave him alone.
Well, I mean, you can just quote Kobe Bryant, you know, S-O-F-T, soft. You know, we've seen the movie Life. We saw what Kobe called him. Everybody knows Dwight Howard is soft.
Oh, well. So, well, somebody must have told him that that he wasn't, because he going after Tyson Chandler, and I'm telling you, he wants none of that. But this right. this Houston Rocket Dallas Maverick series, this might be the bloodbath that we've been talking about out west, because these teams, I mean, they have zero love yeah. for each other. So this big man versus big man. Chandler versus Howard is going to be interesting. I apologize for the interruption, but Ron, what was your, you started talking about the Cavaliers and just yeah. feeling like LeBron had another gear, had something to show you later on and would take the team. Well, what are you seeing from them so far, though?
Well, you know, where I think, you know, where they are, you know, where they're strong is defensively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of ways, I still think, you know, offensively, they're still, you know, trying to figure out, you know, where, you know, Love's role, how he's going to be. And I think Love is just kind of fitting in. You know what I mean? He's just sure. kind of, he's just playing. He's not, you know, if it comes to him, great. If it doesn't, you know, he's just going to play basketball.
Okay.
Which I like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because, I mean, Irving, LeBron, you know, they're going to dominate the basketball.
Right.
You know, they're going to decide if he gets it or not, basically. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, but defensively is what I like about him, because the additions of Shumpert, you know, who's back playing and healthy now, and J.R. Smith, I mean, when I saw that come across the wire, I was like, oh, boy.
Right.
That's a game changer.
Right.
Because the defensive presence that they bring to the table, that all of a sudden now on the perimeter, who can't they guard?
Exactly.
You know, that's probably what I like most about them. And I think, you know, LeBron knows that, you know, to make it, to get there, you got, if nothing else, you know, you're going to have your struggles some nights, but defensively, you got to bring it every night.
Right. Yeah, and you're right. The dirty work contributions that Kevin Love is bringing, you know, he's getting you double-digit rebounds every night, you know. You know, he is the walking double double, and he's doing that regardless of his offensive touches. I will have to agree with you there. Regardless of his offensive touches, he seems to still be plugged in to doing whatever it is that he can do. If it's
right.
getting you 13 or 15 boards, then he's going to go and get those. But you also said it right. He does seem uncomfortable offensively. I mean, I've seen him miss. Just like I said, the game tonight, I've seen him miss point blank layups. I've seen him miss dunks, you know, right around the rim. And it can only be, I can only attribute that to his, you know, he's just not comfortable in the offense just yet. But I think it'll come. I mean, I think it'll come. You know, again, let's remember, this is the first year that all these guys have played together.
Right.
But to Phil's point, not only is Boston really not the level of competition that you would expect in terms of challenging Cleveland. There's not a, really a lot of teams that are going to face in the East that would bring that level of competition. So we'll see how as their season progresses. Now, Ron, not to pick on you totally and completely, but I did notice that you picked the old men Spurs to come out of the West. And the Spurs are in a dog, although it's only been one game, tomorrow night will be game two. That one game made me feel like, and maybe I'm overreacting, and if I am, that's what we do anyway, but it made me feel like the Spurs are in a world of hurt with this particular Clippers team that they're facing, and I picked the Clippers to come out of the West, and let me tell you why. Part of it is that they'll be able to dispense San Antonio, and getting San Antonio out of the way and getting them out of the way early, that helps everybody's chances in terms of winning the West. Spurs are the type of team that you don't want to give them momentum, you don't want to give them second chances, you don't want them lingering around. You're right. The Spurs make it to the Western Conference Finals. Yeah, they'll win the West. So I like the fact that I think the Clippers have the best. And if you recall last year when they won the title, they went seven games in their first series. I believe it was Memphis took them seven games.
Okay.
And in that and that seventh game could have went either way. So although they won it all, I mean they were only a turnover, a missed shot away from sitting at home at the end of that first round. So that's part of it. That they get rid of them early, you got a good shot.
Right.
But the second reason that I say that the Clippers can win the West and why they are my pick to come out of the West is everybody on that team is in the exact same situation of it is put up or shut up year for all of them. It's put up or shut up for Doc Rivers. It's put up or shut up for Chris Paul. It's put up or shut up for Blake Griffin. It's put up or shut up for DeAndre Jordan. I mean, you got this entire cast of people. No, I mean, it's the entire organization. It's put up or shut up for Steve Ballmer. I mean, every single person in that organization, it's go time right now. We've been sitting back watching this team get pieces, get together. Oh, well, Donald Sterling holding us back. Okay, got rid of him. Oh, we need it. Vinny Del Negro is holding us back. Okay, got rid of him. They're out of excuses, and they have to, and I think everybody knows it, they have to show something now. Well, you know, we're the second most favorite team in our own building. Okay, Lakers ain't even in the question. Every obstacle has been removed from them, so they have to show up. And lastly, they got a healthy Blake Griffin that is on a freaking mission. I know y'all saw Blake Griffin. I don't even know what to call it. I don't know if you want to call it a personal dunk contest. I don't know if you want to call it a photo shoot for posters. I mean, I don't know what you want to call it. But the education, let's just say, that he gave, what's the gentleman's name? Is it Alex Baines, I think was the gentleman's name. He looked more like Amanda Bynes when Blake Griffin got finished with him. And I've never seen Blake Griffin that focused, and I've never seen him that committed to making look when he that one play where he brought the ball up from the top of the key, hit the spin move, and finished with a dunk. That's when I was like, okay, yeah, this is a different Blake Griffin, y'all. This is a different Blake Griffin, and he's come to play. And the time that he was absent from, I don't know how many games he missed, but he missed a good portion of the season, if you recall. And I feel like the time that he spent away from the game, that gave DeAndre Jordan the opportunity to really kind of fill out his role or fill out where his role can be on this team. And granted, there's not enough space for both of them down low, you know, to have big nights. But in those times, and we've seen it, you know, Blake Griffin, he can get himself in some foul trouble in certain games. And I think they've proven to themselves that even in those situations where Blake may get himself in some foul trouble or may not be having a good night, DeAndre is another option in the low post, and he can, you know, and he knows what to do with the ball. So that's why I'm loving the Clippers there. Well, Ron, what about you? I know you picked the Spurs, but I know you right. saw that butt whooping though. I mean,
yeah, I did. And everything you said, you know, like you said, you know, it's a kind of a put up or shut up kind of year. You know, and I'm a huge, you know, obviously played point guard mm-hmm. my whole life. I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hope, you know, that he is able, you know, to take his team there. You know, but when I, and maybe, you know, I'm still kind of stuck on, you know, years past, and even through the season, I just hadn't seen the consistency with mm-hmm. them as a team. And I'm still looking at San Antonio.
Okay.
And even though they lost that game, you know, we've seen, you know, in the past, you know, we've seen the type of adjustments Popovich can make.
Right.
You know, we see the same players, but the roles have changed. Now Kawhi Leonard is the forefront of this crew. So, you know, you're taking a little pressure off Ginobili. He don't have to do as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still have Parker, who still is one of the top guards in the league and can still get it done.
Right.
Tim Duncan still doing his role. And, you know, and to me, you know, your players off the bench are just even a little more seasoned after last year.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard them say that, you know what, yes, we won championships, but we've never won it back-to-back.
Mm.
That's what we wanted. And that right there kind of, you know, put something to say, you know what, they're on a mission as well because they want to be able to do something they've never done. So they still got a carrot, you know, hanging in front of them to shoot for.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, if they can get one on the road, you know, then I'm looking for San Antonio, you know, at least to get to the next round.
Okay. Phil, did you get a chance to see that game, The Education of Alex Bain?
No, but I'm watching right now. Whenever you started talking about the dunk that he had,
mm-hmm.
so I pulled up Blake Griffin on ESPN, and it has Bone Thugs and Harmony pay tribute to Griffin dunking. So they had him on Sports Nation. And what's funny, though, is Bone Thugs is on there. They're all decked out in Cleveland gear, so I guess that's where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
But they're paying tribute to that dunk, and, yeah, I mean, that was pretty filthy. I guess you're talking about he made a spin move about the top of the free throw line
yep.
and then just went down and threw, yeah.
yeah.
People in the stands were grabbing their head. They couldn't believe what they just saw. Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Yep.
And, you know, the thing about the Clippers, what I like about them is kind of the same thing that I like about any team that I feel like has a legitimate chance to win the championship, and that's about the weapons that they have.
Right.
When Ron was talking about the Cavaliers and their defense, but it's also on the offensive side of the floor, too. You know, you've got a guy that can score with LeBron James. Irving can score. He can put up 40 points in a blink of an eye any game. And then right. Kevin Love, I mean, we've seen what he can do. He's a great talent. So they have these weapons all over the court. To me, that's is what makes it so difficult for another team to beat you when they have all these weapons and they have these different ways to score. It's the same thing with the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chris Paul can do it. Blake Griffin, of course, he's been doing it. DeAndre Jordan can clean up, you know, around the basket. And you know, that's tough to defend. So there's just so many ways that they can score the ball, and that makes it difficult for any team. But, I will caution you, just like I do every year, after one game in a series, we say, oh, that team is finished. You know, and they may even lose the first two games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, oh, you know, they're done, they're finished. And then they go back to their place, they win two more, and we say the other team is finished. So, you know, I think it's too close to call it, it's too early to call it for sure. I kind of want to see how they play in the second game. I want to see how they play when they go back home. But these series, the momentum can change, you know, from one game to the next. So, I wouldn't say that the Spurs are out of it because they've been coming from behind, you know, for the last however many years, and
sure.
they seem like they just keep getting it done. So I wouldn't say that, you know, the Clippers have an easy road by facing the Spurs right now because their records were almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think these teams are very evenly matched, and I don't know how the divisions work out in the NBA, and maybe that's why they got paired up, but They're very, very close, and I think they're a good matchup. So we'll see, you know, if Griffin and those guys can keep up the momentum. But I was surprised, you know, clicking on their roster, Chris Paul is making $20 million this year. You know, I mean, that is a lot of money, but he earns it because, I mean, he is the premier point guard in the NBA right now.
I knew I could count on you, Phil. I knew you were going to go in that hole where overreacting, this, that, and the other. So I had some numbers pulled up for you because I knew that's where you were going to go. First thing you got to remember, you're saying it's one game. But in all actuality, Phil, it's really two games. Because, if you recall, they had to play New Orleans in the last game of the season to secure the second seed. See, they wouldn't even be in this position if they could have beat New Orleans, and they couldn't do it. New Orleans beat them, is what threw them down to the sixth spot, which is why they end up having to play the Clippers in the first place. So, for all practical purposes, that was a playoff game. It had the intensity of a playoff game. So, they've really lost two playoff games back-to-back. That's my first point. Second point is, if you go in and if you look at the box score from that game, only Tim Duncan and Kawhi Leonard played 30-plus minutes. That's the only two that played 30-plus minutes. If I look at the Clippers starters, all five starters played plus 30 minutes. So what does that mean? Well, that means when Popovich is bringing in those scrubs to give Duncan and give Tony Parker and to give Kawhi Leonard a breather, they're still going up against number ones in L.A.
Right.
And I think that And if Doc's doing it on purpose, and let's face it, this ain't Doc's first rodeo, and if he's doing that on purpose, they will outrun them all series long. Matter of fact, they can make short work of them because they don't have the stamina. They've never had the stamina. Because let's remember, Popovich, that's his thing. Rest players, rest players, rest players. And you say on the surface that's a good thing until you need somebody to play 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And the most they've ever played is 20. I think it was Duncan in the post-game interview, out of his own mouth, said that they played harder than we did. They played harder, they played longer than we did. So even the players are admitting that they don't have the stamina to keep up with that type of play in that young team. And I don't know what adjustments you can necessarily make to get your starting five more minutes. I mean, if they're sucking wind early in, that's what it is. But anyhow, and I know you want to rebuttal that, Phil, but I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to let you.
Yeah,
we can't.
You know.
We got to move on. I want to get you on that. You was telling us about Golden State and that sexy pick of the Splash Brothers. You made some valid points there. Again, that is a series that I was a little bit shocked that New Orleans would be as the games would be as close as they have been. And you corrected me by saying that the score really isn't indicative of whether the games are close or not. But that little bit surprised me. But I'm of the opinion, Phil, that, and I think Ron kind of shares this, I'm of the opinion that as good as they look, the Splash Brothers, and as pretty as their shot selection and their shooting charts are, and as fun as they are to watch, I don't think they have what it takes to win the Western Conference. And here, I'm going to draw parallel as to why. When I look at them play, what it reminds me of that Cavaliers team that went to Dallas, won two games on the road in Dallas, D-Wade and LeBron laughing and joking, saying that Dirk choked when he walked by in the hallway. They made the little choking sound, and everything was fun and games. Got back to Miami and messed around and got swept the next four games because they weren't battle-tested yet. They thought everything had been easy up until that point. It was all fun and games, and we're just having a good time hanging out with my buds, playing basketball. And they messed around and got waxed. And I'm not saying that New Orleans can do that to them, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's where Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, because it's the same to me. It's the same style. They loosey-goosey, laughing, joking, having a great time. But we've said it. Playoff basketball is different. It's a different level of competition, and it's a different level of intensity. And if you're not ready to match that because you don't know what to expect, you mess around and you're sitting at home.
Who put them out last year?
Let's see. Golden State went out to...
Was it San Antonio?
You know what? It very well may have been San Antonio. Whoever was made light work of them. Let me go and check that out. Let me pull that up real quick. Phil, you got that? You got that close by?
No.
Let me think for a second. For the first round, there were two games that were there were two series that were great. The Portland and Houston, they had a great battle. Houston got them. I actually think it may have been Houston and Golden State. And did they lose the first round or the second round? Yeah, they lost in the first round. I don't know. I can't even call it.
I can pull it right now. I've got it loaded. Let's see, that was a postseason. I guess that's last year.
Right.
They got put out by the Clippers, it looked like.
Oh, okay.
I was just trying to remember, you know, because they played a similar style. Because, I mean, basically what everybody's saying is that they're a better defensive team than they were last year. Well, offensively, you know, you're kind of still seeing the same type of play, and I was just trying to remember what team was it that was able to, I mean, because it's basically slowing them down with the three-point shots.
I mean,
that's what you have to take away from Golden State. That's where you have to, you know, really limit their looks of beyond that arc. You know, the NBA, you know, is changing with this, you know, analytics and the three-point shot is changing the game to a sense that it's almost becoming like a European style of play. And you have to, in my opinion, adapt to a European style of play defensively.
Right.
To where, you know, where we look at percentages a lot in here in the States and over in Europe, they look at points.
Okay.
You know, because we'll say, oh, well, that's a three-pointer. He's only shooting 35% from there. I'll give that up versus the two. And in Europe, it's like, well, that's a three-pointer. I want to take that away. I'll give up the two. So, because that's an extra point. And that mentality, you know, is coming more into the game with some of these teams that are doing follow more of the analytics like they used to.
So, like Golden State. So what is the European way of defending that then?
The way of defending is you don't help on shooters.
Wow.
And you take away, you know, the three-point shot. You know, I remember... You know, my first year over there, and you know, my coach looking at me, you know, because we're taught one thing: when the ball handler penetrates strong side, which we say is where the defense is held position. He's coming towards me,
right?
And I have a shooter in the corner. My job is to step in, slow the ball down, then get back to my shooter. Well, no, that is what we're taught here in the States. You know, you stop the penetration first, make them shoot the jump shot. Well, in Europe, because that's a three-point shot, and they're getting an extra point, you don't help strong side.
Right.
You got to shoot in the corner. You stay strong side on your man. You don't help. It's got to come from the weak side. And that is something that I still watch and see a lot of that coaches have not adapted to at high school, pro, or college level.
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to tell me not to double one of the Splash Brothers if they sit over in the corner. That would be a hard habit to break, not wanting to help out if when you see Steph Curry spotted up over on the wing.
Right. You know, or when a guy's penetrating, you know, it's just what we've been taught from day one as a player playing defense. You know, you help. You know, that's your help. He gets beat, you got to help. You know, but and you're giving up an extra point versus a lower percentage shot is how we look at it.
Now,
and, you know, I'd like to just join in on the Warriors discussion. I mean, I think you're a little bit off base on a couple of things about them, Terrence. I mean, number one, I don't think that they just play a loosey-goosey, you know, I'm just here to have fun style of basketball. Maybe in the regular season, but they looked focused whenever I saw those first two games against New Orleans. And the first game was out of hand. They gave up a lot of cheap baskets towards the end of the game, let them back in it. But, I mean, I don't think it was ever really in question who was going to win the game. But even if they did play loosey-goosey, I mean, the name of the Clippers, the team that you picked to make it to the finals out of the West, the nickname for what they do is called Lob City.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what's more fun than that? What's more loosey-goosey than throwing alley-oops? What's more easy style of basketball than Lob City? So if they can make it out, then I think that the Warriors can. But to me, I mean, I think they take it serious. They have an inside presence. They, like Ron said, I think they are tougher on defense, and that's probably the biggest change from last year. And, you know, that series did go seven games. And so the Clippers beat them, I think, at home 126-121.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a competitive series. You know, you've got Steve Kerr. It seems like he's doing a better job than, who was that, Jackson?
Mark, hey,
coach last year.
Watch your mouth now. Watch your mouth now. I'm not going to co-sign on that. Not co-signing that.
But I'll tell you, I mean, Kerr obviously is pretty smart. I mean, he turned Phil Jackson down to go to the Knicks for, you know, that dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think that Steve Kerr has at least, you know, some semblance of what's going on by turning that down and going to Golden State. So I think they are a little bit different. And that was my fear. You know, I told you before the playoffs started, the Warriors were not going to be able to do what they do in the regular season in the playoffs. It just wasn't going to work that way.
Right.
After I saw the game, though, I saw, you know, how the changes that they did make, the way that they did step up the intensity on the defensive end, the way that they, you know, don't take wasted shots and all these things. So I don't know. I mean, I just think they do have a chance, even though the regular season may prove or may, you know, indicate something different.
Right.
But let me make a blanket statement, too, about the officiating. I think they've done a great job. You know, what we talked about in the college game.
Oh, my God.
Mm. How just terrible it was. It is so refreshing to watch the NBA game and see how much better the refs are. And it just, there's a better flow, a better feel for the game than what you see in the college game. So I'll say kudos to that. But one last question I want to pose to both of you. Why did y'all not tell me that Richard Jefferson was still in the league? I had no idea that this dude was still playing basketball. I mean, I saw a glimpse of it. I'm like, there's no way that's Richard Jefferson. I just didn't know why anybody didn't tell me that he's still in the league.
Dude, let me add to it. Vince Carter is still playing meaningful minutes in the league with Memphis. I saw him the other night, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Ron, you can lay some
up.
Ron, you can lay some up and get back in there right now, dude.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, it's interesting when you, like you mentioned Vince Carter, because he was a superstar in the league, right?
Yeah.
And what are always people, you know, which I never really agree with, but they always talk about, you know, superstars, you know, when they're not at their highest level anymore or able to really produce like they did, you know, it's time for them to quit. To me, he is the first superstar to prove that, you know what, even though I'm not doing what I can do, I can still contribute and I can still continue to play without, I don't know, quote unquote, embarrassing himself.
Mm.
You know what I mean? He's still a, because also he's been willing to accept, I mean, hey, I'm coming off the bench.
Sure.
So I'm going to play this many minutes. So where most superstars wouldn't do that. You know what? I'm not a starter anymore. I'm not a high volume scorer anymore. I'm out.
Well, you know, the other person I would have to put in that conversation, and I've never liked his game, I got to put Paul Pierce in there.
I got to put Paul Pierce.
You know, Paul Pierce, again, meaningful minutes. I mean, in fact, on that young Washington team, I mean, he's the closer. You know, when they're coming down the stretch in the fourth quarter, they're looking for Paul Pierce to make plays. And he's answering the bell every single time. Now, you know, there was a lot of talk this week when Paul Pierce called out ex-teammate Deron Williams and the Nets, saying that, you know, he wasn't the point guard that he should be, that he, you know, not a leader on the floor, doesn't take over games, nowhere when you need him to be. And the sad but true thing about it, whether you like Deron Williams or not, an ex-teammate calls you out in that fashion, you would expect him to answer that with his play on the floor, and it didn't happen. In fact, his play on the floor in the very next game, well, made Paul Pierce look like a truthsayer. I mean, everything that he said, that's what he displayed in that next game. So, I don't know. Actually, I don't even know why I brought that up. Oh, I brought it up because of Paul Pierce, yeah. But we'll see how that series goes. There's one other series in the East that I want to get your guys' opinion on, and that's the Chicago-Milwaukee series. The reason that it's interesting is for the first time in Lord knows when, we've actually seen Derrick Rose play in a playoff game. I watched the first game, and it was clear that he didn't have his playoff legs under him just yet. Only played about 6 minutes and was on the bench with oxygen, seemed like. Was gasping for air, clearly out of shape. And right when just picked up my phone to send out a tweet about that, he comes back in and lights it up. Derrick Rose showed me something. I've been critical on this show of Derrick Rose for the past 3 years, but that second and third quarter, that third quarter in particular, in that first game with the Bucks, Derrick Rose showed me something, and he really is an elite point guard. Not in terms of his ball handling skills, not in terms of his distribution, and his ability to score around the rim. Milwaukee had no answer for his quickness, and they had no answer for his versatility and the different shots, the different layups, whether it was going with a reverse, a finger roll, a floater. I mean, he had the whole array of shot selection around the rim, and they were all going in. He showed me a lot. And if he can stay healthy, I'm on board now. If Derrick Rose can stay healthy, he can be something special.
I mean, I have to agree with you, man. And, you know, obviously we haven't seen him for a while. He's been hurt, you know, how, you know, the world we live in, you know, is kind of like, you know, if we don't see you for a while, we kind of forget about you.
Exactly.
You know, we talk about, you know, I hear, you know, my buddies all, you know, Russell, Westbrook is the most athletic point guard we ever seen, and I still believe that Derrick Rose will hold, you know, that title to be true. I'm with you, Chance. I haven't seen anybody maneuver, change direction, jump, finish at the rim like he does. Russell Westbrook probably has a little more power, but not as, you know, not as maneuverable as what, you know, that Rose brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I pray that he stays healthy because he is fun to watch. And it was nice to see him back. And he looked, I mean, like you said, he looked scary at times.
Mm.
And you're like, man, you know, if this guy can get back to that MVP status
right
that we've seen before, because he's got an improved jump shot now,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go along with that quickness off the dribble. So, you know, like I said, hopefully, you know, I mean, they can make a run if he plays well as well. I think they're going to be the team that gives Cleveland a run for their money to see who, you know, takes that Eastern Conference title.
Yeah. Phil, you get a chance to see Rose play?
Yeah, a little bit I did. And I was impressed with a little bit different aspect of what, you know, you guys are impressed with. I mean, that's what Derrick Rose does. I mean, he is athletic, finishes at the rim. I'm not surprised by that at all. What surprised me is the fire in which he played with,
mm-hmm.
because I hadn't seen that in so long. Even when he came back, it was still almost a very passive style of play. If it was open, he would take it, but he didn't really want to go down there and take something that could be a little bit of a risk. And I'm not judging him because I don't know how any of these athletes have, you know, a catastrophic injury like that and then come back with the same courage to go and trust that knee or, you know, whatever was injured, like Adrian Peterson. I don't know how you come back from tearing an ACL to, you know, almost breaking the all-time, you know, single-season record. I just don't know how that's possible. So whenever I watch the way that he played and the way that he was fired up, that's, you know, that's what I wanted to see from him. Not just, you know, quiet passes and all that. I wanted to see the MVP guy and someone that wanted it and, you know, was going to put his body on the line to get it. So that's what I was the most impressed with from Derrick Rose. And, you know, I'm like you. I think that Russell Westbrook is a better athlete, but I think as far as the skill level, I think Derrick Rose has that. You know, you see a lot of times where Westbrook gets going faster than anyone on the court. He'll throw it off the backboard, you know, it'll bounce back to half court. You know, he just doesn't have that touch in the field, whereas Derrick Rose always seems like he's able to slow himself down or shoot over the top of someone. And, I mean, it's a craft. It's an art form. And it's great to see him performing at that high level again. So, yeah, I was very impressed with the way that he competed in this first series of the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, Ron touched on something I have to agree with. I'm not sure how the brackets break down on the East side either, but I do see Chicago as being the one real threat to the Cavaliers, and that's mainly because of their defense. You know, they're pretty tenacious defense. They're known, you know, that is their hallmark of that team, and that I could see that could be a spot where I'm not really sure that Cleveland would match up well. I mean, I don't know if you got an answer for Gasol. I don't think you have an answer for Noah from a defensive perspective. So I don't. I agree with Ron on that. That is the one team, Chicago, that could really give Cleveland some trouble, but would make for an interesting series.
That'd be a must-watch series right there,
but yeah, we'll see how that pans out there. Now, you bring up Westbrook, and we talked about Derrick Rose being the former league MVP. The vote should be coming out any day, and it, you know, there's so much different fascinating angles on this whole MVP race. You know, much of the talk has been around Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, and of course we know he's not going to win MVP. I mean, his team didn't even make the playoffs. And then James Harden. But the thing that blows my mind when you talk about particularly James Harden and Russell Westbrook, it's crazy to think that last year's MVP was Kevin Durant, and those three guys at one point in time were on the same team. When have you ever seen a team where three people on that same team would be in an MVP candidate conversation? My, if Sam Presti could have figured out a way to make the money work to keep James Harden in Oklahoma City, they would have been an unbelievable dynasty there. But who do you have, Ron, in terms of this MVP race? It's really coming down to James Harden and Steph Curry. Who do you see getting the trophy then?
Well, who I see getting the trophy and who I think should get it is two different things.
Well said.
I just think Steph Curry will get it, but I believe James Harden deserves it.
Wow.
I just believe James Harden done more with less because of the amount of time that Dwight Howard was out.
Right.
I mean, he still had a good team, but he had to carry that team.
Right.
You know, I felt like Stephen, you know, he still had Clay, you know, along the side to still kind of, you know, do the brunt of the work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still, you know, everybody wants to say he was the best player on the best team.
Yep.
But, you know, I look at, you know, individually, because it's still an individual award.
Right.
Individually, what did this man have to do? And I just felt like James Harden had to do a little more.
I think, Phil, I think you're on record with that Steph Curry as your pick. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, and I see both sides of it, but to me, it's like when LeBron was in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
For him to put up the numbers that he did, to me, is more impressive. Even though he was on the best team, it's more impressive because you have other guys that can take the load off of you, and yet you're still able to put up those good numbers.
So right. It's
the same way with Steph Curry. He is surrounded by talented guys that can shoot the ball, that can make shots. Of course, teams are focused on Curry because he's putting up, you know, really good numbers, and yet he is still able to get those numbers, even though he's surrounded by talented guys that, you know, demand the ball just as much as he does. And, you know, when you look at the efficiency of how Steph Curry plays, that is what impresses me. You know, James Harden, great numbers, no doubt, but his efficiency is not as good. He takes a lot more shots to do the things that Steph Curry does, for other teams do. So, you know, I think that can cloud the way that he does things. It's kind of like the Westbrook. I mean, he has great numbers.
Sure.
And yet it doesn't translate into wins. So it's impressive, but it has to lead to something. And I think what Steph Curry accomplished with the Warriors is more impressive than what anyone else did.
Well, I'm going to completely boycott the MVP because the fact that LeBron James isn't even in the conversation lets me know that the award is bogus in the first place. There's no way that you can have a conversation about the National Basketball League's most valuable player and the word LeBron James never comes out of your mouth.
I'll tell you what, I agree with you to a certain point, but that guy, I mean, I'm old school, and to me, you know, this resting and all this kind of stuff in the season, that eliminates you from the MVP. You wasn't hurt.
Taking a whole week off.
You're taking days off, man. You can't get the MVP.
Well, and I guess it really just comes down to how you look at what the award is. Because when you say to me, the most valuable player in the league, to me, you're saying, okay, you are going to start your own squad. Who is your, just like when you was in elementary school and you picking teams for kickball. And so if we lined them up again in the schoolyard, and I'm a captain and I get first pick, I'm not picking Steph Curry. I'm not picking James Harden. Man, I'm picking LeBron James. That's the first pick I'm going to make. And if y'all are honest with yourselves, y'all would do the exact same thing. Look, I'm not going to put you on blast and make you answer, but you know I'm right. Ain't nothing.
But to me, those are different things, you know. And that's, you know, that's where, you know, the fine line, because like you said, he's the best player. No question.
Right.
No question for nothing. But you got to look at the body of work for that season and what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
What hurt him last year, and he knew it because he was mad about it,
right,
was that, okay, I'm playing very well. We're winning. Kevin Durant is playing well. But what separated him? Kevin Durant hit a buzzer beater.
Mm.
Kevin Durant, another game, he hit a buzzer beater. Miami, they don't even call his number.
Oh.
He don't even get to take the
shot.
Those were the little things that he was upset about because he knew those were going to be the deciding factors of who wins that race.
Yeah. Well, since you were last on the show, Ron, I guess I should have brought you up to speed. You know, Phil has done turned a tractor on LeBron. You know, he was a LeBron fan somewhere along the line in last year's finals. He totally turned his back on him, and he don't have nothing nice to say about LeBron. So.
Really?
Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's
what was the line I used? Why can't I quit you? I finally had to quit him, man.
Dude, he come at LeBron so hard now, boy. You would never think that he was a one-time fan. Yeah, he got nothing nice for him. So I'm sure he would gladly pick Curry over LeBron. But like I said, and I hear you. Don't get me wrong. I agree with you in terms of the body of work and the type of seasons that these other cats have had. Particularly James Harden, and I love what Steph Curry's been able to do, and I am one of those that kind of agree with the concept of best player on the best team. You know, I think that's you know, a logical way to look at that type of an award. But it's like I said, it just seems laughable to me that, you know, you're not even looking at LeBron. He's not even in the conversation. I feel like he would be, and it's clearly to me just a situation of fatigue in terms of voting for him year after year after year. Same thing happens to Alabama, you know, or the SEC in general in college football. We'll see here pretty soon, because it should be announced here in a little bit who's going to win this. But there's a couple of games I got to tell you that you need to check out. Tomorrow night, you got to watch this game 2, Spurs versus the Clippers. We'll see if it's more of the same or if Popovich can make some tweaks. That's a definite must watch. But I'm telling you, folks, this battle of Texas, Houston versus Dallas, there is some bad blood. I spoke on it a second ago, the Tyson Chandler, Dwight Howard scuffle. And then just before the halftime, James Harden and what's my guy's name from Boston, the point guard? Rondo. They was getting into it. So there's some bad blood, some hard feelings in there somewhere. I'm not sure why. You know, and you know what? I got to admit, and Ron, because you're a purist, so I know you didn't get caught up into this, but Phil and I had talked about this on a couple of shows back. Football was so compelling this year. I mean, just, it may have been one of the greatest football seasons we'd had. And college football, you know, with the first college playoff, you know, it stayed in the conversation forever, to the point where I pretty much missed the entire regular season of basketball. And then when March Madness started, this was such a great tournament with all of the upsets and whatnot early on. I have no problem admitting to you, I really didn't start watching NBA on a regular till the last week of the season. You know, and I said that to say this, I've missed a lot of, you know, like the emergence of Draymond Green. Didn't know anything about, I mean, I knew he played, I knew he was there, I knew that, you know, they got him because David Lee got hurt, whatever, but I didn't know he was that much of an impact until I saw him the other night. You know what I mean? I mean, heck, I don't even remember Paul Pierce. I can barely remember Paul Pierce left the Nets. I mean, it was just all these different things that I completely missed because football was so compelling. But I'm playing catch up right now. Hey, listen, great show, great conversation about these playoffs. We'll have the opportunity to continue this on. Ron, you know how we do it, man. When we're in the basketball playoffs, so you're welcome with us every single week. Hopefully you have the time to join us. But that's going to do it for this show, folks. We'll wrap this thing up and sign off. But if you like this show, you like what you heard, you want to hear this again, or any of the other 99 episodes, be sure to check us out on iTunes. And if you want a decent Twitter follow, check us out on Twitter at PO Show Radio. And of course, check out any and all of these stories, some of the stories that we talked about. Hey, you may even find some commentary, but I'm going to make sure I get that video of Blake Griffin destroying Aaron Bynes. We'll have that up on the show page, www.poshowradio.com. Again, you've listened to the 100th episode of Polar Opposites. That's the PO Show with Big T at Cool Hand Film. And of course, this time of year, we're joined by our friend, Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer Ron Rutland. Hey, we'll do it again next week, folks. Same place, same time. Good night.
Thanks for having me, guys.